Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 10, Episode 2 of Das Daily Zeitgeist for December 12th, 2017. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Potatoes O'Brien, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Hi, minasan, konnichiwa, Miles desu. And that is for anyone who speaks Japanese. But anyway, what's up? It's Miles.
A.k.a. Oh, Miles, my, oh, hell, Gray. Is that good?
Well, you kind of misread that. I think it was more like a Tom Petty lyric.
Yeah.
Oh, my Miles. Oh, hell yes.
I like it better. Oh, hell, Gray.
Well, all right. Well.
Hey, we're thrilled to be joined in our third seat by probably maybe fifth time guest, Edmund Montplaisir.
Oingo, boingo.
Edmund.
That's what Miles called him in
that was
the first
a practice episode, and nobody will ever hear that, so don't worry about that.
Edgar, what's happening, man?
I'm just chilling. Yo, shout out to the Low Energy Mob family. Anyone out there who has been indoctrinated into the Low Energy Mob family, shout out.
Yeah, I saw you invited somebody over to the Low Energy Cookout. I think I saw that on Twitter.
That's right. If you shout out to me on Twitter with some positive vibes, you are now in the Low Energy Mob family. But if you talk some shit, the Low Energy Mob family is going to come for you.
I don't understand what any of this means.
It's all very cryptic.
So you're starting like a gang of low energy people?
That's right. I think that, you know, we like to favor high energy comedians, but let's give some low energy comedians a chance.
Oh yeah, shout out to the
who's a low energy comedian?
That who's getting a chance right now?
Yeah.
Nathan Fielder.
There you go.
Yeah, he's crushing it right now.
Brent Weinbach.
Yeah, he's crushing it right now.
Low energy.
All great. Edgar, what's something from your search history that's revealing about who you are as a human being?
Interestingly enough, search party.
Ah.
I've been searching search party a lot lately because one of my friends told me that the entire second season was available. And I was like, that's not possible. And I Googled it and it was.
Yeah.
The entire second season is available right now.
So apparently first season, they released everything all at once. And then the second season, they started out thinking that they could maybe try it out the old school way of doing it weekly. And then halfway through, they were like, nah, fuck all
that. So
it's got one of my favorite comedians on it, too.
John Early?
No, Caperland.
Oh, okay.
Caperland is
in the second season. And
yes.
That's crazy. John
Early's
probably really hurt.
Like, the first season was great. I haven't watched the second season, but she was, like, the missing element. Because it had John Early in, like, one of the greatest John Early roles ever. And then, yeah, he
together and
Caperland
are, like,
they're perfect.
They're bread and butter.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, I know Kate personally, so I look, I'm a John Early fan, but I'm a Kate Berlant stan since the beginning.
Damn.
So shout out to Kate. Maybe she'll come on one day.
Edgar, what's something you think is overrated?
I think that AV Club's top 20 albums of the year list is overrated.
What's
albums
on there
that didn't make it, man, some whack shit, man. Like, I mean, I thought Sylvan Esso's album was good, but like top 10 for real. And oh, man, I don't know. It just kind of made me mad, mostly because they just excluded an album that I really wanted. And listen, I love Kendrick Lamar's Damn, but number one album of the year? I don't think that's true.
What's number one for you?
Number one album of the year is Flower Boy. That's
Tyler,
the Creator's
Tyler
album.
The Creator.
Go watch his Tiny Desk concert yesterday.
Yeah, it came out yesterday, right?
Yeah, go watch it. Like, it's insane to think that this is a guy who started off by being like, I'm a fucking Triceratops.
Yeah.
And like now he's like doing these smooth R&B rides and just dropping good ass.
Well, it's funny,
music.
You watch him like sort of mature over the years too.
Yeah.
Because I remember like when he was doing the Odd Future thing and I worked in radio, he came through the station and I was like, this kid is a fucking asshole.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
He's stupid. And like you could see his sensibilities over time have like matured and he's less. Like, he seems like he's finding his voice more as an artist.
Reward the come up. I think that we don't do that enough. We don't reward the come up enough.
I'm just looking at the rest of this list.
I don't know anything. I think the National's overrated.
The National's pretty good. I don't know. I like the National. They should have put Peter Matthew Bauer from the Walkmans album on
LCD
there.
LCD Sound System's American Dream was dope, but it's just like, hey man, that album was 5 years late.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing Migos culture on here.
Oh, they didn't put Migos on.
Well, I guess we've seen it all.
Putting SZA's Control on there was dope, but
yeah.
Besides that, I was like, come on, guys. Like,
so that's overrated.
What's underrated?
Donald Glover's amazing come up is so underrated. I feel like we don't talk about enough that this dude started off in a YouTube video called like
Bro Rape.
That's insane to think that he started off with such a shitty YouTube video and is now like pretty close to EGOTing. Like, I think he might do it.
Tell people for the uninitiated what the EGOT is.
It's when you get all four Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony, And I don't think it's mostly only done by like composers and editors.
Right.
I think very few performers have one. I think Whoopi Goldberg might have one.
Maybe Streisand.
Yeah. It's very hard to do as a performer. Usually you can do it as something in the background. Like, you know, like you can costume or something. Like something like that. Like I think a lot of composers are usually the ones who are able to do it.
You need to start treading those boards, right?
Yeah, I mean like Audrey Hepburn, Mel Brooks, Whoopi, Scott Rudin. Let's see. Babs, Liza Minnelli, James Earl Jones.
It's very hard to do as a performer. And I think Donald Glover, like, he was a sketch comedian.
Right.
And now he's nominated for multiple Grammys.
Well, I think it's one of those things, right? Because a lot of comedians are musicians also.
Yeah.
Like, because they're both inherently art forms that are about timing.
Yeah.
You know, and I can see how, you know, even for myself, like, I've grown up playing instruments my whole life. But you wouldn't know that because the skill that I more honed or pursued over time was just doing comedy or just having, an opinion on the internet.
I am
or whatever.
Also a musician.
Yeah, see, and like, so I think it's like good that, I think for him, it just, because he got his foot in the door through acting, it's allowed all those other talents to just like, you know, he has the time to now like make a great album and like work with great artists and great directors. Yeah, I mean, I'm every day sort of in awe of like his whole evolution because it's wild.
I don't know if he's the first Black Renaissance man, but he's like the dopest to me right now, because that's something that like Black people aren't allowed to do. Like, you know, we always get mad at rappers when they start acting, but we'll let a white dude do like 10 things at once. I've always seen that. It's like a white dude playing 10 instruments at once, and they're like, yeah, that's amazing.
He's a one-man band.
And it's just like,
bands have gotten too much credit in our culture for too long.
And then 50 Cent's like acting in a movie, and everyone's like, you can't do that. Rap about killing people. And it's just like, Donald Glover's showing like, listen, we're hella talented. And
I heard 50 Cent has been putting in good performances in movies I just haven't been watching.
Like, he lost a ton of weight to play a cancer patient.
Yeah,
that was wild.
It was
I just thought he was broke.
That literally nobody watched, but yeah, he dropped.
He cares a lot about acting. Like, he really wants to be an actor.
I've heard he's pretty good. He's just bad at
picking
movies.
You know, 50, a.k.a. Ferrari, is 50, break it down. I saw Get Rich or Die Trying, and that was last
time
I watched
50 Cent.
Yeah, I was
like,
nah, I'm good. But I'm sure, I don't know. We'll see what Curtis is up to.
Yeah. Donald Glover was in Derek Comedy. That's what, like,
the sketch group.
Because they were just starting out when Cracked was just starting out. And it was him, DC Pearson, who's actually a really funny dude.
Dominus Dierkes.
Yeah. But I do feel like that was sort of the cool thing to be. Like, the way that in the 70s and 80s, like, everybody wanted to be in a rock band when they were like in high school and college, like being in an improv group was kind of the cool thing to be at
the smallest group of people, Jack.
Yeah, right.
To the smallest group of people.
Because I was not getting days being like, hey, come to my independent sketch comedy show in a theater you've never heard of.
Yeah. Right.
People still don't respect him. My Uber driver just laughed at me over here. He was like, what do you do? You do stand up? And I was like, no, I'm kind of like improv and like, you know, and he's like, you should do stand up. I was like, all right, man.
You mean theater sports?
Yeah.
Yeah. Theater sports are the hot new hip thing that people will be looking back on the way we look back on rock and punk rock in the 70s and 80s. All right. Let's get into format. We're trying to take a sample of the ideas that are out there changing the world. Take a temperature of the shared consciousness of our species. Or America at the very least. The temperature is 98.7.
It's a slightly higher.
Just a touch high. We like to start out talking about the zeitgeist by asking our guest, what is a myth that people tend to believe that is not true? So Edgar, fix the zeitgeist for us. What's a lie that we all believe?
So on the DJ Khaled song, All I Do Is Win, T-Pain sings the chorus, everybody's hands go up, and they stay there, and they stay there. That is incorrect.
Up, down, up,
actually,
down.
What he's saying is everybody's hands go up, and they stay there, and they say, yeah.
Fuck out of here.
He tweeted it. He tweeted it. He's just like, I don't want to throw another wrench in your childhood, but also it's everybody's hands go up, and they stay there, and they say yeah. So y'all have been rapping this song wrong.
Does it go back and forth after that? Because doesn't he say it like three times? Or and they stay there,
and they say yeah, and then it goes up, down, up, down, up, down.
Oh, so that makes sense then, because up, down would not make sense if they stayed there.
Correct.
Unless.
Correct.
And they stay there, and they say yeah, up, down, up, down, up, down.
And then all I do is win, win. What do you guys think the best usage of that song ever was?
It's whenever you do a commercial for Indian gambling casino.
No, I think it's...
they have that... Yo, that commercial... I've seen it on so many, like, casino things. It's like, oh, because it's all about winning at a casino.
Right.
It's a great song. I mean, it makes me almost think, like, wow, maybe this isn't a problematic casino.
I think it was when Barack Obama did it for what is it called? The White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did. 2013. He was just like, all I do is, and he just came out just hella chill.
You can do a little ditty bop to that one.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Edgar, for correcting the official record on that.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. We are going to start out, as we have been of late, with Benghazi.
Benghazi.
Because there have been more revelations and also just more. To talk about
Roy Moore, that is
that one. So first of all, the NFL Network, which I could not think of a place that I would less want my daughter to work. Like it just seems like a problematic place just in concept. So apparently, three analysts from the NFL Network have been suspended amid allegations of sexual harassment. One of the Marshall Faulk is one of the great. I think he was like a halfback running back type players, but
yes, he was a halfback running back type player. He was a god MC.
Yeah, he was great.
And apparently a crazy dude who likes to expose himself.
Yeah. So what happened here?
So this this woman who was the her name is Jamie Cantor. She's the wardrobe stylist. So all three of these men, like, they were suspended because of their actions towards this one wardrobe stylist at the network. So Marshall Faulk is accused of groping Cantor from behind and exposing himself to her in his hotel room. The other one is Ike Taylor. He is accused of sending Cantor sexually inappropriate photos of himself over text message, which is a very academic way of saying just
dick pics.
Yeah. And then the last is Heath Evans, who is also accused of sending dick pics. Again, yeah, I don't know why.
How dumb are these dudes?
So you're telling me the NFL Network is a toxic boys club? Get the fuck out of here.
There's nothing to say. I mean, we couldn't be more. Can't think of a place. I'm surprised.
It's still horrible.
This wasn't one of the first fucking places. But
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's not to excuse it, obviously. It's just, man, so typical. You'd think that they'd want to be like, all right, we got to go against the grain, play against type
right.
here. Because
like,
people
NFL,
expect this shit.
NFL's already like kryptonite to a lot of people anyway.
And on a wardrobe stylist, like, you're so fucking dumb, bro. Like, that's just so...
You got to see them every day.
And right.
Like, what did Marshall Faulk be like? I'm finna grab you by the waist.
Yeah.
Remember that K. Roosevelt song? Anyway.
Nope.
But yeah, groping her from behind, it's... I'm surprised anybody would be left to work at that fucking network.
I can't understand the logic behind unsolicited dick pics. It's just like, that's evidence. It's just like, you're just like, yo, I want to commit a murder, but tell everyone about this murder that I've committed.
It's like a photo of you, like, stabbing a picture of the person you're about to kill. Like, how'd you like that picture I sent? It's like, well, this isn't going to look good for you in court.
It's trash.
Yeah, it's that whole sort of power dynamic that people seem to like more than I would have expected based on my own experience. They like to make people look at their dicks, or dick. I don't know how many dicks these people have, but
unless you're the guy from Reddit.
Right. That is apparently a thing that gets people going that I was not aware of. It does not get me going.
It's like, I guess it's a digital version of being a flasher. You
right,
know what I mean?
Exactly.
With the trench coat.
That's been a thing for a while that I think is just foreign to some people. But I don't know. Yeah. And most people I hear from are like, yeah, I don't get it at all. So I don't know. Maybe they're lying.
Well, but, you know, these guys have plenty of time to figure that out when they're not on the NFL Network anymore.
Right. And so today, as we're recording this, the state of Alabama is voting. By the time you're listening, the election might already be decided. So we're not really going to talk about that, but we do want to just talk about how Roy Moore rode into this election. What kind of wave he created for himself that he rode into the election on. So he had one final rally where his wife and a Vietnam War buddy of his kind of got together and spoke to he and his family's values and why they're good people. So his wife started out saying, "People say we don't care for Jews," which is, first of all, just the most racist way to describe racism. It's like downplaying racism. Like, we don't care for
insert ethnic group or religion.
Exactly. It's like, don't care for is just like downplaying what is like hate and
I'm too busy to hate niggers. I'm just too busy.
Right. But I don't care for them.
Right. But then she said, but we have a Jewish lawyer. To paraphrase, I don't know if that's exactly what she said.
I think she said something about like
our lawyer is a Jew.
Oh, even worse.
Yeah.
Hey,
when our lawyer is a Jew,
right?
And so is our Lord and Savior is a Jew also. Right. If y'all remember that, if y'all remember that detail,
she would not remember that detail.
Christ, the Son of God, was also Jew, so I don't know how I can be anti-Semitic.
I love me some Christ.
Those thoughts have never collided in her mind.
It's just weird. I mean, like it's the same thing that people who typically our race is used to defend their racism. It's like, I can't be, I have a black friend. Yeah. I have an Asian friend. I have a gay friend.
Right.
You know, it's like whatever the group you're, you know, accused of being prejudiced towards, this is a fucking, it's like the most elementary defense. Well, right. How can I be, I mean, I know a black person or like I know a Jew.
So. Right. Yeah. There's actually a piece in the LA Times by a reporter named Michael Finnegan who raises the question of whether this is actually intentional. Kayla Moore's comments saying one of our attorneys is a Jew could be seen as almost so overtly bigoted that it could be seen as part of a long history, a long tradition of Alabama politicians in the immediate run-up to an election saying something bigoted to sort of stir up their voter base, the racist people that they want to get to vote for them. And that was actually something that I noticed that we talked about back at Crack during the 2016 election is, you know, we would all freak out and assume Trump was done every time he said something blatantly racist or sexist, and then his polls would either stabilize or get stronger.
Right.
And I just wonder if we're seeing that happen. Like, it's not a bug. It is a feature of the system. It is them using racism to, you know, signal to people, hey, we're on your side. So I don't know. That's a really interesting point that I hadn't thought of until I read the article that, you know, maybe they're doing the same thing Trump did, which is sort of dog whistling to people who haven't heard their name called in a long time. It's been politically incorrect to say one of our attorneys is a Jew for a long time, or, you know, a bunch of the stuff that Donald Trump's followers have, you know, gotten excited about him saying. So maybe that is actually exactly the point.
Well, it makes sense, too, because Steve Bannon is running this thing from the shadows.
Exactly.
And since he was the architect of Trump's victory, he clearly was like, hey, this is actually a good strategy to have to stoke the enthusiasm. And it totally makes sense, too, because Kayla Moore, that was a totally prepared statement that she made. That wasn't like, by the way, like off the cuff kind of thing. Like,
right.
She knew she was going to go up there and she was going to say that. So that is a very interesting thing about that. They're using the old Trump playbook. But yeah, that's just kind of like what that race has devolved into, is that these are the kinds of defenses that they have for themselves when he's clearly on the surface saying some wild anti-Semitic shit.
That's just crazy that they threw a rally for it. That's just something that you can send in like a newsletter. Like,
right. Yeah.
Here's a picture of me and my Jew lawyer. And then like everyone's like, all right, cool. Like, we don't need a rally for this.
Right.
That's so crazy to me.
But they are so out of things to cheer for. Like, that's the thing. They had to hide their candidate. Like, that's how out of things they are to cheer for.
He was standing deep behind her. Like,
right.
He was like.
Also, let's not forget how they met.
Right. So they keep trotting her out and putting her front and center because it is evidence of him having a normal relationship, you know, supposedly.
Right.
But they talked about how they met. He has told the story of how they met. And Miles, what happened exactly?
He went to like a dance recital where he saw her dance.
What age?
She was like 15 or 16.
Right. She was a high school student.
Yeah.
And not a senior.
Always said, he's like, and I remembered her. And then when he met her years later, he asked her, he's like, hey, did you ever dance at this thing? She's like, I did.
Right.
And he's like, and that's when I knew.
Right.
And it's like, bro, you literally had your eye on her since she was a minor.
Kind of pervy layaway.
Right. Yeah, exactly. He's just got that mental image that he can call back to. Yeah, so that supposedly normal relationship, not normal. And moving on with Edgar's theme of them not having much to cheer about. So then he had his war buddy from Vietnam come out and say that he and Roy Moore, on one of their other fellow soldiers' last day in Vietnam, went to a brothel. And the rest of the story is, you know, his account of what happened. And keep in mind, this is like the story that he has chosen to highlight to testify to the character of Roy Moore.
and he took us to this place, which turned out to be a brothel. We walked inside. I can tell you what I saw.
Nervous dry cough.
I don't want to.
Yeah, you saw a child prostitute?
You didn't hear what some kind of place it was. And Roy turned to me, in less time than it took for someone to come up to us. And there were certainly pretty girls, and they were girls. They were young. Some were probably very young. I don't know. I don't remember that. I wasn't there long enough.
Okay.
Roy said to me, "We shouldn't be here. I'm leaving." Or words to that effect. In fact, I think those were his exact words. And I said, "Roy, I'm with you." I said, "What do we do with the other guy?" And he said, "Well, he stays on his own."
Wow, there's a baby crying in the background.
Right. Yeah.
They're talking about, hey, what? I can tell you what I saw.
Yeah, so to paraphrase, we went to a brothel, there were children, and these were extremely attractive children, and Roy Moore chose not to fuck them, yeah. And that is evidence that he is a stand-up guy.
Yeah, Roy Moore was probably just like, listen, man, we shouldn't be here. I know a mall in Alabama that got way hotter girls
right,
than this,
exactly.
Bro. Why are we here?
Right.
These girls are trash. Let's go to this mall in Alabama.
Right.
He's like, we should go to Da Nang.
There's a reason that defense attorneys don't typically bring up witnesses who are like, I once saw him not have sex with a child.
Right.
That's such a wild
defense. That doesn't help
right.
you.
That is just not how you prove innocence.
OJ held a knife around me a lot of times.
Right.
And I can tell you, he never stabbed me.
It's like, yeah, it's like when you're saying like, oh, he smoked, like, I know he's a crack addict, but one time we were in this dope house.
Right.
And there was a whole bunch of rock on the table and he didn't smoke it.
Yeah.
He just went home.
Right.
It's like, okay, well, maybe he was already high, got his fill, or, you know, he just didn't feel like smoking crack that day. That doesn't prove shit.
Or he has a type of crack that he likes
yeah.
or something.
It's like, what the fuck?
Well, I can't even imagine a picky crack addict.
Right, right. Yeah. I think that's actually not the best metaphor.
Well, again, I don't think even a guy who's a child predator who clearly can't restrain himself, I don't think even has that level of control. I mean, I'm saying this guy, look,
where'd you get this crack at?
Right.
What street?
What vintage?
And then Roy Moore extended this logic by one of his final media acts was being interviewed by a 12-year-old girl. Again, just, you know, using the logic that, look, he is managing not to assault this 12-year-old during this interview.
Right.
So we good.
Right. It's like, would we allow him to interview with a 12-year-old girl if we thought this man was an actual sex crim?
Man, niggas are so dumb. Oh, man, this is crazy.
It's just wild. It's like you're trolling, though, too, right? It's like, oh, the accusation he's a pedophile? Well, have him do an interview with a little girl.
Yeah,
just to be like, you know, so it's provocative. You know?
Right. But then he showed that he was a true man's man by how he rode to the vote today, right?
He came in on horseback.
Right.
To fucking cast his vote.
Right.
And what was the thing on Drudge Report?
So Drudge Report's headline for part of the morning of the election was a picture of Roy Moore on horseback, and it said "Brokeback Election," which was so confusing to me because it's like it's like a teenage insult. But what?
Who's it aimed at?
Was that the only Western they could think of? Like, I just feel like maybe Drudge has like some weird issues that have made that stick in his mind or something.
No,
I don't
it's
know.
The weirdest.
It's just such a strange headline.
The pervy. I'm trying to
right.
think of some
yeah.
Other
there's
right,
so
right, right.
many ways you could have gone with that.
Because is Drudge supporting Roy Moore?
He has gone off and on right. supporting him, but it's this is just so far out of left field. It's just
that didn't make sense.
Forgiven would have been a better one.
Right.
Instead of Unforgiven.
Yeah. Right.
Listen, hire me, Drudge. I'm chilling. I'm broke. Like, let's do this.
I'm looking for a room to get in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to get some of that Russian money.
I'll be down to be in any room.
Right.
If Drudge Report had a show, I'd be head writer.
Oh, yeah. And they would parade you out there and be like, look, we can't be racist.
Yeah,
look at our
right.
head writer.
Right.
He's from Haiti.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. So sometimes the world makes you take a step back and ask big existential questions about our species. And that's, I think, a healthy thing to do. Get your head out of the here and now and all the, you know, day-to-day maniacal craziness and take a look at, you know, what's going on
right.
with our species just writ large.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, one thing that's making me think this way, there's a cigar-shaped celestial body that just passed by our planet. It's like light pink and dark pink, like all over. It's weirdly shaped, like nothing we've ever seen floating through our solar system. And a Russian billionaire is actually sending shit out to listen for radio waves to see if it's an alien ship.
I'm sorry, when you say cigar shaped and then it's like pink, are you describing a penis?
It sounds like you're describing a dildo, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why I hadn't put that together, but that is...
As you're saying, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a good punchline.
It's an alien dildo floating around.
Honestly, what's happening?
Oh, and he thinks this is some kind of alien craft. This wouldn't be the first time, though, that people really got excited about some kind of alien structure.
No, yeah, definitely not the first time, but it's just a real weird-looking thing. They've, like, shown pictures of it. Here's what it looks like. It's like it looks like a dick.
Looks like a giant space dick.
Right. Big old space dick.
I don't think I could respect that alien. Like, he was like, and, yo, I'm here to invade you. Be like, nah, dude, your ship's a dick. Get out my face.
Well, but if you were an alien and you had been watching our species from a distance.
Right.
Like, you see that we make everything into dicks. Like, everything is dick shaped.
Phallic, yeah.
They know that, like, we have dicks, so like they put two and two together. They're like, all right, we need to send something that's going to get their attention.
Oh, okay.
It's a dick. Damn. Or it
and that was the
be...
show, guys.
Yeah.
Benghazi.
No, so I don't know. It's probably nothing, but it's just interesting to ask the question, what if aliens are sending giant space dicks to, you know, fuck our world into existence? But we want to talk about something that's a little bit more likely to be happening, which is the sixth extinction, which... you might not realize is a thing we're probably living in right now, or depending on which scientist you listen to, we're on the very edge of, if we don't change our ways. Some people think we're actually in the midst of it. So, yeah, it sounds like a Nicolas Cage DVD that no one wants to buy. That's like in that 7-Eleven discount DVD rack.
Yeah, also, who's buying DVDs at 7-Eleven? Like, when I see that...
Not me. What? No, definitely not me.
Zach, why are you sweating?
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. So there have been, as the name would suggest, five major extinctions. The Permian extinction is the big one, in which a whopping 96% of the species on Earth died, which means today Earth is made up of the descendants of just 4% of what Jesus. Once lived on our planet.
Is that like dinosaurs? Is that the dinosaur one?
So the dinosaurs died off in the what's known as the Cretaceous Paleogene extinction event, something that I knew off the top of my head because I'm so smart. But this one is just, it killed off a bunch of, you know, amoebas and also some vertebrates, but, you know, killed off a lot of life on Earth. So when I picture dinosaurs all dying off, for whatever reason, picture like a giant explosion and then the dinosaurs just are all dead.
Right.
But apparently there are competing explanations for what happened, but most likely it was over the course of, you know, years that the dinosaurs died off, and it was like changing weather patterns and changing, you know, atmospheric conditions that killed the dinosaurs off. And the same goes for the Permian extinction. There's not like one giant explosion that they can point to and be like, that is what caused it. It could have been an asteroid impact, flood, basalt eruption, catastrophic methane release, a drop in oxygen level, sea level fluctuations, or, you know, some combination of those things. And so that ties into the sixth extinction, because I think we all assume that we would know if we were going through an extinction event like the dinosaurs right. went through. But according to many scientists, the sixth extinction is actually already happening right now, in the sense that billions of animal populations have died off at an alarming rate. They say it's nearly one third of the 27,600 land-based mammal, bird, amphibian, and reptile subspecies are shrinking in terms of their numbers and territorial range.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah.
It's real subtle. It's the frog in the boiling water kind of thing.
Damn, bro. I knew I was going to make it to the 27 Club. I knew it, man. From the very get, I was like, I'm not making it.
I'm in the sixth extinction.
Shit.
Well, it's true, too, because I feel like, I don't know if we talked about it on the show, like a couple, maybe it was a month ago, where those German scientists had found that, like, the biomass had shrunken, like, at a very alarming rate over the last 20 years. Like, the amount of insects and other things in, like, the forests and, like, areas that weren't really being interacted with by humans, was also experiencing like a huge shrinkage in the biomass there. So, right. Yeah, I guess maybe there is something to this whole fucking sixth extinction thing.
Right. Well, can I make a guess?
Yeah,
we probably are the only ones who are aware of it, right? Like, I mean, I don't know if dinosaurs could talk and shit, but I'm pretty sure there was no dinosaur scientist coming out and being
like...
No,
they had Crossfire, actually, back
okay,
then.
Okay, right.
Yeah, and they were just...
today on Crossfire.
Debating, yeah. Debating what was the cause, but, you know...
Does that mean that we can change it, though, because we're aware of it?
Well, that's what you would hope, Edgar. You would hope that we would, but just going with some more horrifying statistics. So the rate of extinction of species... whether you believe we're in the extinction event or just in the direct lead up to it, is currently estimated at 100 to 1,000 times higher than the base or historically typical rate of extinction, and 10 to 100 times higher than any of the previous mass extinctions in the history of Earth.
That's so this is the bomb extinction. This is
right.
We the best.
This is suddenly we're seeing a drop off
that
is way – yeah. Is way steeper than anything we've seen
wow.
up to this point. So, yeah.
Have they said, like, a guess as to when they think it could happen?
Yeah, it's either already happening or... So the debate is essentially whether it's too late to start conserving animal species or whether there's still time, essentially.
Right.
Up to 50% of individual animals have been lost in recent decades. Detailed data is... only available for land mammals, and almost half of those have lost 80% of the range, their, you know, range that they live on in the last century. And billions of populations of mammals, birds, reptiles, and amphibians have been lost just all over the planet. And all of this is a side effect of human innovation. And it's anything from, you know, actually chopping down forests where the animals live to industrial runoff to global warming is obviously a huge one that's only getting worse. And it can be super subtle things. Like there was this frog that the New Yorker writer Elizabeth Colbert wrote about in her book, The Sixth Extinction. There's this frog that used to be the only reliable pregnancy test that humans had, because you would take... urine from a woman you wanted to find out if she was pregnant or not, and inject that urine into this frog. And if it laid eggs within the next 12 hours, that meant you were pregnant. And so they started bringing this frog with them everywhere around the world. And the frog had a fungus on it that started killing off all these other frogs.
Holy
shit. It's like not something that we could have really known ahead of time. It's
right.
just inevitable sort of side effects of human sort of development in human life.
Also, shout out to the guy who figured that out. Because he, for
right?
a long time, probably looked like the craziest dude in the village.
Yeah,
he was like, no, pee on this frog, ma.
Right. No,
I'm
just like going around injecting women's urine into different animals.
Nah, I'm good.
That's the sort of thing that you only find out if you have like a weird fetish or something.
Bro, I think I knocked up this girl, dog. Get her pee and meet me at the bridge.
I'm gonna bring the frog through.
Yeah.
Bring the frog through. I gotta know for sure. Well, yeah, it's true because like, you know, a lot of people, when they talk about the sixth extinction, is like the thing you're talking about is the global homogenization of flora and fauna too, like of people now because of technology. Like we can bring plants that were, indigenous to certain areas, like anywhere.
Right.
And like that's just completely unnatural.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, because of technology, like we're fucking up the natural process of evolution because we can do that. Cause also like we're engineering plants and animals and things like that. And we are like forcing the process as humans, which is very scary. And like I was reading another thing about like in past extinctions, it takes life 10 to 30 million years to recover.
Right.
Bro, I don't got that time.
Yeah. I mean, so the one hope you would have is I think genetic modification gets a bad rap because we have generally used it to, you know,
make
fuck
fat
things
tomatoes.
up to this point. But I do wonder if using genetic modification, we might be able to create new species, like once we're a little bit more scientifically advanced, that can, you know, replenish the Earth. But that's obviously a very delicate balance because, you know, as we were saying with the frogs and, you know, zebra mussels are just taking over lakes all over America. If anybody who has had to deal with them knows what a nightmare
they
are.
Wait, what is a zebra mussel?
A zebra mussel, they look like barnacles, like that would grow on,
on
the hull of a ship, but like just one, if you get just one into a freshwater lake, they take over and like things will happen. We talked to somebody when I was at Cracked who like fought these for a living, and he said that you would just all of a sudden start seeing boats sinking in lakes and you wouldn't realize why. And it was because there was like so many zebra mussels on the bottom that it just pulled the boats under.
Wow.
And it's basically, they're almost impossible to fight. They clog up pipes. They clog up just everything. And they're sharp. So you really can't get in there and fight them.
So, I mean, it sounds like a lot of it is just because humans have become too goddamn sophisticated that we're basically fucking ourselves up.
You know, they say like a little bit of knowledge can be a dangerous thing.
Right.
Like somebody who like is just smart enough to like think they know everything.
Yeah, like a 20-year-old.
Smart enough to actually know everything. Yeah, a teenager, a 20-year-old. I guess my hope is that that's the place we are as a species. We know enough to like do all this clever shit, but we don't know enough to keep that clever shit from fucking everything up.
Like the consequences.
Then, right. But like once we get smarter as a species, we might be able to control the consequences and fix all of our fuck ups.
I mean, so, I hope so, man.
I think genetic modification right now is like a very scary thing, but it might also save our ass down the road.
Yeah, well, to save us from ourselves, like,
right.
Is the irony of it, right?
Right?
Is that we are feeding into this whole fact that we're meddling in evolution. Because, like, yeah, a lot of the things that I've read in terms of, like, our technology getting better is that, like, we are directly interfering with this natural process that brought us here and is possibly going to bring us down. But I guess there is some good news because everything I read is, like, feels very kumbaya, where it's like, yes, maybe we are the problem, but we're also the answer.
Right.
You know, because like I guess it's going to take real sort of revolutionary change in terms of how humans even view their role in the ecosystem.
But then
like,
where do we start with that? Because I mean, that shit, like, I'm the problem, but I'm the solution, sounds like something an alcoholic says.
Right.
But then
right.
he goes out and like gets way more drunk. So,
right.
Well, so, like, what do we do?
Yeah. I don't think there's anything kumbaya about it because it's not a thing where you're sitting back and waiting for good things to happen. I think it's science needs to challenge itself with focusing on things that don't necessarily make an immediate profit, but
right.
are keeping the human species in existence.
Well, and I think also, too, it's like about really taking conservation seriously,
right.
restoration very seriously,
right.
rewilding,
right.
you know, and like rethinking how, again, like what our sort of effect is in this whole chain. Because like right now, a lot of people don't realize, too, that humans are like obviously the, well, I don't know what the proper term was, the apex predator or whatever. Like we
right.
are by far the biggest consumers and the biggest predatory force on the planet, and no other species in the past has ever had such a distinction. So like we're like the X factor in all of this too, because there's been nothing like this before. There's been nothing like humans before. And I guess we got to use these brains to start doing good.
Right.
Start giving back.
Yeah. And I mean, the ideal situation is that, you know, we are in a position where we can just focus on saving the planet, but you know, the reality could be that as climate change ramps up, how, you know, our living conditions change, it's going to be harder and harder for us to focus on anything but survival of our species,
right.
let alone, you know, repopulating the planet with animal species. So that, you know, climate change is no joke, I guess.
It's
already starting wars, like the whole...
I know you were dubious at first.
Yeah. I
now
came
you're coming
this,
around.
Yeah. But we talked in a previous episode about how the whole, you know, hell that has befallen the nation of Syria was started by climate change.
Yeah.
Right? Like it was
a drought.
A drought that mm-hmm. fucked things up. And when there's not enough food, things fall apart. So yeah, I don't know. That's a big picture thing to keep an eye on. And
I don't know what to do except like really sigh.
Yeah, this story depressed me.
Cool, man. Well,
hey, but see, we're arming the people. So again, when Christmas happens and you got to deal with your family and you go, like, we would really need to be talking about the sixth extinction.
That's true.
We don't need
to
be talking about Hillary's emails.
No,
right.
Yeah.
He's like, what are we going to do about all this biodiversity we're ruining?
Right. It is kind of an example of science finally getting their terminology right, because global warming is like such a weak ass, like horrible phrase. It's
that
like, it's getting a little warm, you know?
Oh, better turn the air conditioner on.
Right. Whereas
sixth
the sixth extinction sounds fucking terrifying. It's like, a biblical event.
Yeah, maybe that will help. But again, God, can we help people really realize? I think maybe extinction is provocative enough that
you got to hit them where it hurts. You know what I'm saying? That's it. And we're not hitting them where it hurts. You got to say, listen, you guys, if this shit gets bad, you can't watch Big Bang Theory anymore. And I bet money this shit gets fixed.
Or whatever the Sheldon spinoff is.
Yeah, Young Sheldon. More Young Sheldon if we don't have more biodiversity.
Oh, my God. Okay, I'm calling my senator.
I heard that show's delightful, by the way.
Have you?
I have.
Really, though?
You heard?
Have the real cat. You I have heard. A very sarcastic
look on. You just heard?
Because
you're sweating again right
well,
now.
No, I've never seen it. Never seen it. But I just heard it's good.
Yo, he's wearing Young Sheldon promotional sunglasses right now. As he says this. And with a bow tie.
Yeah, with a bow tie.
Promotional bow tie.
Don't have a cow, dude. That's his catchphrase. Nah, I don't know.
That's terrible.
doesn't sound like a Young Sheldon catchphrase.
Don't have a cow, dude.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. So we're going to get into some pop culture stuff.
Finally, I'm relevant again.
Just to tease that tomorrow we will be bringing some hot fire from super producer Anna Hosnier. So we found out that the mayor of San Francisco passed away. Rest in peace. Rest in power. Ed Lee, is it?
Edwin Lee, yes.
Edwin Lee. And Anna, like, got this strange, faraway look on her face. And then, like, she started going Agent Kuyan at the end of, like, Usual Suspects, where, like, all of a sudden the stuff is, like, coming together
Kobayashi.
In her head. She's like, wait a second! And, like, started, like, saying all these random things out loud, including Shrimp Boy. something tied to a guy named Shrimp Boy. And, yeah, so apparently there is some vast conspiracy that is unwinding itself in our genius producer Anna Hosnier's mind. So stay tuned for that.
He also died in a Safeway.
He died of a heart attack in a Safeway, which a public heart attack would seem to be a hard thing to fake as an assassin. But we will see. Anna is going to work
we'll see,
it out.
Yes. Yeah.
But that's what's going on in the office today. out in the zeitgeist, some big news is that the first reviews of The Last Jedi are rolling in, and the Metacritic meter says it's going to be great. It's a 87, which is Ooh. Like up there with, you know, the Oscar nominees right now, or the movies that are likely to be nominated for Oscars. It is, the first reboot, The Force Awakens was at like 81, so that got really great reviews, and you know, people have mixed opinions on this one. But Miles, I know you said you're not watching any previews.
I'm not watching. Okay, so I really love Star Wars, and I with The Force Awakens and Rogue One, I sort of just went crazy with the trailers and featurettes or whatever, just trying to get as much information because I've been so Star Wars deprived over the last however many years.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously, yeah, the prequels were fucking garbage, but yeah, now to see, like, so many people on Twitter who have gone to screenings and, like, people whose opinions I respect, like, who like good films, to see these people get so excited, like, people are really excited about this and just like, I can't, this is great. This, I haven't seen a Star Wars movie. They said this could be the second best Star Wars movie after Empire.
Right.
That's a bold claim.
Yeah, there's a film critic, Alonzo Duralde, who is a really good critic I like a lot, who said he thinks it's third best behind Empire and the OG original Star Wars, which is pretty crazy.
Well, I'm here to say I don't care.
Of course you are. Now tell us why.
Listen, you guys, why are we doing this to ourselves? Why are we letting them trick us? Is it any coincidence that this movie came after Force Awakens and is supposed to be just like Empire Strikes Back? We are stuck in a loop of the same garbage movies being played to us over and over and over again. Let's break it.
That suggests that Empire was a garbage movie. Do you think it's a garbage movie?
I think it was great. But
well,
I don't
perfect.
Need to see it again. I don't need
well, I don't
it
think
again.
That people, I don't think people are likening it to Empire in that like it's structurally the same. Like you could say that The Force Awakens definitely was very derivative. Like if it was nearly like...
It was scene by scene.
Yeah,
scene
it was scene. It was wild. Like, whereas this one, people are saying, I think it's because it's such a departure. Like, from what I've read, I don't think that people are comparing the actual content to Empire, but
right.
but the feelings that you get as a Star Wars watcher, that it, it recaptured that magic.
Right. Force Awakens, I think, got a lot from, like you're saying, people just being excited, like that nostalgia wave.
And we haven't had a good Star Wars movie in ages.
Right. And so that came out. Now I think we're at a point where the movie actually needs to be good.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's been multiple movies in the last few years. Like, we're at a point where people could be like, if they see a shitty one, they'd be like, I'm tired of this shit, man.
I don't
think
that's true, though. I don't think that's true.
I
think Disney has gotten us hooked in a way that it's just like, they're just like, man, we could put out a movie where it's just a poop with a lightsaber and y'all would come back.
I would.
You see, and I think
that's actually what you're hoping this is about. That's why you're not
that's
watching.
That's what I'm not watching. Yeah. I'm hoping, yo, that it's just a sentient doo-doo. Count doo-doo.
You know what my favorite one was so far? Rogue One. Because it was so different than all the other ones. And that's kind of like what I want from
Edgar's
Last
weeping,
Jedi.
By the way. Yeah.
I am weeping because no one wants to stop making these movies. Do you understand the amount of scripts that sit on desk all day long because people are funneling money into these Star Wars movies?
Right.
Well, that's a whole separate issue. You know, like,
is it separate?
I think so.
John Boyega, you're not the next Denzel Washington.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Hey, coming for John Boyega.
John Boyega. I mean, credit him. He was in Attack the Block, right?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, when I first came out, I was like, yo, this is
dope.
This
is awesome. Dope.
Wait, shut up. You just said this. Can't just then be like, yo, I like John Boyega.
I liked him in Attack the Block.
Nobody's
I don't
the next
like
Denzel
him
Washington.
In the Star Wars movies.
Yeah, no one's the next Denzel because nobody has money to drink on a boat.
Yeah. Right.
Just keep the people around him safe.
I'm excited for this movie because I've been a big fan of Rian Johnson since Brick.
I do love Rian Johnson.
Which was like just the right amount of pretentious for me when I was in my 20s. I was in my 20s, a big fan of like film, not movies, man. Film,
man.
And he released this movie. People should check out if they haven't seen it. It's
love
like,
film noir.
I'm still there.
Yo, I'm such a film buff. I love film noir.
Yeah. Film noir's sick, dude.
French New Wavy.
But it's actually very
suave.
It's very good. It's like, I don't know. It's like noir meets Shakespeare in that it's like written in heightened language meets like sort of a high school movie, Donnie Darko-ish type thing. It's really good. And ever since then, I've been like, yo, this dude's going to be awesome. And, I don't think he's like fully followed through on the potential of that movie. And I'm always excited every time one of his movies is about to come out.
Well, he went into TV instead and directed some of the
and directed some of the best
of
episodes
Breaking Bad.
Right.
I didn't realize that till earlier when you were telling me that.
Ozymandias.
Now I'm gonna.
He directed Ozymandias from the last season, and he directed the bottle episode,
The Fly,
which is
a bottle episode,
and in 53 as well.
It's a bottle episode, like where the characters are like stuck in a specific location and.
So, yep. Miles, the bottle episode is when the production is just like, we don't have any money, and they have to write an episode only using one set.
Right.
Put me in a room.
Everyone,
please showbiz explain that to me, sir. Yeah, it's true. It's like it's a contained thriller episode, right? That's why contained thrillers, guys, are the favorite of the studios to make because they don't cost shit.
Yeah. Right.
And then also in pop culture, we have a tweet from Netflix that was kind of creepy because they... So the big thing about Netflix is that like doesn't really get acknowledged is that their whole model is built on collecting data about your viewing habits. That's the most valuable thing that they have that movie studios don't have. They know every moment of everything that you're doing, what you're watching, what like when you stopped watching it, you know, they just know a lot of shit about you. And they tweeted pretty recently, I think the other day. What did they tweet?
It said, to the 53 people who've watched A Christmas Prince every day for the past 18 days, who hurt you?
Damn.
Which is wild, first of all. Like, don't shame people's binge-watching habits. And also, how are you going to flame people for watching your own fucking movie? That's like a Netflix original film.
Yeah.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. It's a Netflix film. And guess what? I have watched it. So I didn't watch it 18 days straight, but I saw it because I like terrible movies. And it's terrible. It's like a garbage film. But yeah, it's just a very – they really showed their hand, right, is that they could basically find out. It's like, oh, we know 53 people watch this movie 18 days in a row, which I think was also the crazier thing because for the most part, like we never knew what Netflix knew.
Right.
And they kept that a secret for a very long time.
Right. The idea that they know everything about your viewing habits is all based on, you know, us assuming that they do because they must, because of like how technology works. But they never release any of that information.
Right.
They
even to the people who make the shows for them. Like, you could be the showrunner of Narcos and you're not going to know what those numbers
are. Yeah, comedians who have comedy specials on Netflix were like, yo, wait, what?
Yeah,
You're saying that you know that much detail about...
Yeah, and it's interesting too because like their whole thing is built off subscribers, not ratings.
Exactly.
That the fact that you pay in, so the more you can keep, you know, a idea of a buzz happening, like, oh, everybody's watching Stranger Things, I better have Netflix so I can participate in the conversation. But if those ratings numbers, I know like NBC tried to be like, they claimed they had metrics that said that Stranger Things actually wasn't as popular as Law and Order or whatever, and Netflix was like, oh no, there's no way you would know, and that information is incorrect. That just sort of underlines this idea that they need the hype machine to be bigger, because I know there are shows that people talk about, but I'm sure they're probably more in bubbles. Who knows if they're like as widespread as we think?
Yeah, exactly. Right. I just understand why they're being so, like, what do they gain from being so secretive about this? Are they afraid that we're going to find out that their shows are trash and that no one watches them?
I think so.
Well, and also I think it's that they, like, the information is their most valuable commodity. So releasing that information gives other people access to their most valuable commodity.
Yeah.
So it's more valuable for them to keep the information internal and develop their shows based on what they know. So they know that people like Ashton Kutcher sitcoms and they like Westerns. So they make The Ranch, you know,
right.
And like they
with Rapist DJ's co-star,
right. With Rapist DJ co-stars,
Netflix, they're able to look, obviously, like, because they called someone out for watching, like, Return of the King every day for you.
Right.
And another person who watched, like, one of the Pirates of the Caribbean films. So they know how people are watching and what they watch. I also want to tell the listeners, Jack, and we know
we
know how you guys also consume our show.
Right.
And we were shocked. And
yes.
And we're not here to shame anybody.
And impressed.
We were
basically
shocked
impressed.
And impressed. Listen up, guys. There are three people who listen to this podcast on a fucking Zune.
That's insane.
Zune.
The Zune MP3 player.
They're sticking with the Zune,
yo,
baby.
Somebody is... Okay, first of all, if you are one of these three people, please contact me on Twitter with a picture of you with the Zune listening to the Daily Zeitgeist. I will try and figure out a way for me to get you an iPod so I can bring you into the 21st century
right,
proper.
Just an iPod. We just want to bring you to like the year 2002.
Well, clearly, if you're rocking with the Zune, for whatever reason, you like the idea of an MP3 player.
Right,
and yo, I respect the shit out of you. And
I do too.
And look, if you're older, I'm not going to flame you. I'm not going to retweet it. But just prove to me you're that person. And look, I'm going to try and help you out because let's bring you into 2017.
It just hit me because I was just like, why wouldn't he get them an iPod? I have an iPod. And I was like, no, I don't. I have an iPhone. Wait a minute. Does this person not have a smartphone?
Right.
Who knows? That's why.
Probably not.
I want to know this story. And again, I'm not here to shame you. I think you are this person. These people out here, they're heroes.
Or
you know, they're loyal.
Or they know something we don't. Maybe
about the
Zune is like, I've never used a Zune. Maybe the Zune is a superior product and we just have all been hating on it because they chose a bad name and a shitty ad campaign. So
maybe they're aliens.
If the Zune is amazing, let us know.
Maybe they're aliens in a dick spaceship.
Right.
Ooh.
Yeah, maybe they're just aliens flying by our planet in a dick-shaped and colored spaceship. Edgar, as always, it's been a goddamned pleasure, my friend.
Why, thank you. It's been my pleasure, or mon plaisir.
Oh.
Wow. That was smooth as fuck.
Is that French for your last name?
That is French for my last name.
That's cool.
Edgar, my pleasure. Edgar, where can people follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram at Awfulgram or on Twitter at Edgar Montplaisir. Or you can come check out this very, very dope show I have coming out next Tuesday, December 19th at UCB Sunset at 8:30. If you live in LA, please check out my all-black team, Arcade Currency, along with the all-black female team, Obama's Other Daughters. We're doing a Kwanzaa improv show. It's going to be hella dope, hella wild. Anytime UCB lets us take over, we get pretty crazy. Sometimes someone brings out a gun. It gets wild. Listen, let's just have fun. Tuesday, 8:30, UCB Sunset. Please
great advertisement. So you, the people, the threat of violence is there too.
Listen,
you mean a prop gun, I'm hoping.
No.
Oh, you're licking shots in the theater?
Listen, you know a black party's not lit unless there was some sort of violence there.
Miles, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. And please holler at me if you are the Zune users. And don't just fuck around. And if you dig up an old Zune, I don't know if I can believe that. you know, I'm really looking out for these three people that we know listening on the Zoom.
So no, we want pictures with the Daily Zeitgeist on the Zoom, because you can see Zooms actually have full color screens. Amazingly.
Yes, a gigantic screen type.
Right. And you can follow me at Jack_O'Brien. You guys rate and review the podcast. You've been great about it in the past. If you haven't done it yet, it really helps people find out about the show. Tell a friend, tweet about us, tweet at us. I also want some AKAs. Miles asked for some AKAs, and he's gotten an embarrassment of riches. So give me some Jack O'Brien AKAs. And you can follow us at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram, at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We have a Facebook fan page. Just search Daily Z. Even if you don't know how to spell Zeitgeist, it should fill it in from there. And you can find us on the World Wide Web at dailyzeitgeist.com, where you can find our episodes and also our footnotes, where you can find all the articles we used as sources and videos and other forms of media that we used as sources for this episode, because we actually don't just make all this shit up. And because it's Tuesday, Miles, do you have a song you would like to recommend that we go out on?
Yes, sure. Let's do something a little more worldly, because we're talking about Earth. This is Fadul, who is like the Moroccan James Brown. Like, this dude is funky. He's from Morocco. And it's on this new album I just heard about called Habibi Funk, which is all about like eclectic music from the Arab world. So guys, peep Fadul with this song. I think it's called Baslama Habibi.